Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Financial Group Q4 2010 Investor Conference Call. All lines will be in listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, press star, then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand over to David Wishnoff from Tetragon Financial Group. Please begin your meeting, and I will be standing by.
Thank you. As one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited, I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on Q4 2010 full year results and provide an update on business progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's 2010 results. I'll provide a quick overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics. Jeff Herlin will provide market color, and Mike Rosenberg will address questions we've received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding the intentions, beliefs, or current expectations concerning performance and financial condition on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks so much, David, and can I add my own welcome to our Q4 2010 investor call. I'd like to start as ever by providing some high-level comments on TFG's strong results for the fourth quarter of 2010, which are contained in the recently published annual report. I'll also talk about some key performance drivers and try to cover some of the financial questions which have been submitted by investors. As in the past, if you have any further detailed questions on the annual report or the financials, do feel free to send them through to us and we'll answer them directly wherever possible. TFG's strong performance recorded in the third quarter continued into the fourth quarter of 2010, as the company recorded its sixth successive quarter of positive EPS at $1.09 per share, which is equivalent to consolidated net income of $132 million. Cash generation from the CLO portfolio grew quarter on quarter by about 10% to $78.9 million. And consolidated NAV per share, which is net of all fees and expenses to the end of 2010, grew to $9.47. Moving specifically onto the statement of operations, in general, the underlying positives were a continuation on the themes from the previous quarter, namely that the CLOs mainly benefited from strengthening OC cushions supported by reduced underlying losses, increased carrying prices on defaulted and CCC assets, but also a reduction in those CCC assets. As a result, future projected cash flows increased strongly, and IRRs moved up accordingly from 13.7% to 15.1%. Interest income from investments of $46.5 million, plus unrealized gains on investments of $128.8 million, yielded a total investment income number of $175.3 million, which is Tetragon's highest to date. The primary drivers of this performance were the positive fundamentals that I touched on a moment ago, but there was also an increase in income as a result of a recalibration of some of our model input assumptions, which I'll now turn to in the context of the Q4 valuation of Tetragon's CLO portfolio. As we've described in more detail on pages 7 and 8 of the Q4 quarterly report, which we released at the end of January, the methodology for deriving the fair value of our portfolio involves two main steps. Firstly, we project future cash flows, which are mainly driven by the current status of each deal to which certain forward future assumptions are applied. This step helps generate our deal IRRs, which drive the rate at which we recognize interest income, and it also generates the amortized cost for each deal. Secondly, we adjust the future cash flows resulting from step one using a discount rate which we believe reflects an appropriate risk premium for each deal's future cash flows. Generally speaking, if the discount rate is higher than the IRR, the fair value of a deal will be written down to below its amortized cost and vice versa. The difference between the total amortized cost and fair value on an aggregate basis across the CLO portfolio is what we've described as the ALR fair value adjustment, which we've explained in quite some detail on prior calls and, of course, is outlined on our website. The total fair value adjustment between the amortized cost and fair value at the end of 2010 was $258 million. of which approximately $150 million related to the US deals and the remainder related to the Euro deals. Given, as you have seen, the Euro deals account for less than 10% of the portfolio's total fair value, this further demonstrates how far ahead the US deals are in the recovery cycle compared to the Euro deals. Focusing for a moment on the first modeling step, which derives our future cash flows, our assumptions for defaults, recoveries, prepayments, and reinvestment prices were recalibrated at the end of 2010. We did explain the changes in our letter of January 31st, but in summary, the main change was to bring the assumptions we're using for defaults, recoveries, and prepayments for 2011 back in line with long-term norms. 2011's modeled reinvestment prices were increased back to close to par, so not quite to the long-term norm, but pretty close. This was in response to various economic indicators in the fourth quarter, which provided comfort around the sustainability of the recovery, which had begun earlier in the year. In addition, various reports from ratings agencies, investment banks, gave us greater consistency and transparency over the increasingly benign default projections for 2011. These views have been further supported by more recent reports from both the rating agencies and banks, and indeed by our performance in early 2011. I'll now turn to step two of the fair value process, which is the application of an appropriate discount rate to the model's cash flows. As we described in Q3 2010, we currently apply a discount rate of either 23% or 30%, depending upon, among other things, the structural strength and quality of the specific deals. Put simply, the weaker the deal in terms of OC cushion, the more uncertain or volatile the future cash flows are likely to be, so the weaker deals have the higher discount rate applied to them. Over the course of Q4 2010 and into early 2011, various observable data and research have suggested that the risk premium on CLOs has been declining further, as evidenced by significant tightening of underlying credit and CLO debt spreads. From a valuation perspective, however, we're mindful of potential volatility and have therefore maintained the existing discount rates for the purposes of the Q4 2010 valuation. Going forward, if the observable risk premium data continue to demonstrate sustainability at these reduced levels, it's likely that the discount rates may be reduced. A further part of our valuation procedures is to check the resulting values against observable market prices where they're available. It's worth stressing, of course, which I have done in the past, that the values of TFG's own CLO deals cover a broad span, which reflects the range of individual deals' performance levels. And, of course, market data for our own paper remains patchy in the secondary space. Therefore, it's still inappropriate to use market pricing to value TFG's CLO portfolio. That being said, our average carrying cost across the US CLOs, which account for over 90% of the portfolio by fair value, was approximately 66 cents at Q4, up from around 61 cents at the end of Q3, and 52 cents at the end of 2009. We feel that these significant increases reflect the continuing improvement in TFG's portfolio. In addition, there is observable evidence of certain CLO equity paper transacting at levels notably higher than our own average carrying value, and it's something that we continue to monitor in the context of validating our own fair value calculations. Turning from the valuation of the portfolio now to other aspects of the operating performance of TFG, our operating expenses, including performance fees and accrued taxes on LTM results, totaled $49.1 million, representing around 27% of total income and gains, which is essentially unchanged as a percentage on the previous quarter. Looking now at cash, the cash generated by the portfolio continued to improve, reflecting, amongst other things, a strong underlying portfolio performance in Q4, and David will provide more colour later. Total cash receipts from the CLO portfolio were approximately $79 million, or 66 cents per weighted average share, and that's the second highest that we've recorded, just behind the second quarter in 2008. I should note, of course, that our cash receipts will tend not to be even each quarter, given the timing of cash receipts from the underlying portfolio. but a very positive result for Q4. I'd now like to turn to comment on TFG's dividends, which is a topic on which we've received several investor questions. As you're no doubt aware, the board has the authority to declare dividends based on the recommendation of the investment manager. The board and the investment manager remain focused on finding ways to return value to Tetragon shareholders, and the dividend is clearly one important tool at our disposal. But that's alongside others, including the stock buyback and a range of investment opportunities designed to enhance NAV per share and thus the share price. We're pleased to be able to increase the dividend from 8 cents in Q3 to 9 cents per share in Q4, which is 50% higher than the level of 6 cents per share at the start of 2010. We believe that this increase is appropriate at this stage of the recovery cycle for TFG and the asset class, and also when considered in the context of, among other things, TFG's long-term sustainable income levels. Finally, from a financial performance perspective, LCM continues to prove to be an extremely successful transaction for us. The purchase price has already been repaid many times over, and the business is contributing to the bottom line. During Q4 alone, LCM acquired one deal through a corporate action and brought a new deal to the market, thereby increasing assets under management to approximately $3 billion. We believe that LCM has excellent operational leverage, so the plan is to continue to seek opportunities and add business into LCM, as well as to utilize the team's considerable credit experience across other aspects of Tetragon's business. So to summarize my section, we're very pleased with the financial results for the quarter and, of course, for 2010 as a whole. And we believe they reflect strong earnings from strengthening deals and continued growth in cash generation from the portfolio and from LCM. This against the backdrop of improving market fundamentals as we continue to emerge from the financial crisis. And with that, I'll now pass back to David to comment on TFG's portfolio and risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. I'd like to now quickly run you through a few portfolio and performance metrics. With the addition of LCM 8, in our view, the first new issue CLO completed in 2010 where a significant portion of the equity was distributed and a secondary CLO equity purchase, Tetragon's CLO portfolio increased to 70 investments during Q4, up from 68 at the end of Q3 2010. The number of external CLO managers fell to 28, owing to certain manager consolidations that were announced during Q4. As of the end of 2010, the fair value of TFG's CLO investment portfolio was approximately $933 million, up from approximately $820.4 million at the end of the prior quarter. On a look-through basis, this represents exposure to leveraged loans through our CLO investments of approximately $17.5 billion par value spread across over 1,675 corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European issuers. Additionally, as of December 31, 2010, TFG owned liquid U.S. bank loans with an aggregate par amount of approximately $100 million and a total fair value of $97.6 million. This is up from $72.7 million TFG owned as of the end of the prior quarter. This portfolio is comprised of over 40 different issuers. The unlevered loan portfolio continued to perform well during the quarter, benefiting from prepays, amend and extend spread increases, as well as overall loan price improvement. No defaults or downgrades were experienced in the loan portfolio. Since inception, this direct loan portfolio has generated over $3.8 million in trading gains and interest proceeds. We expect to continue to selectively deploy capital into direct loans when appropriate and leverage the expertise of the LCM team in this regard when possible. With respect to the CLO and loan portfolio composition, approximately 74% of the risk capital is invested in U.S. broadly syndicated loans, 9.6% in European loans, and 16.3% in U.S. middle market names. On the hedging side, we continue to hedge our Euro FX principal risk on a rolling basis and presently have no direct credit hedges on the portfolio. I'd like to now update you on some key performance metrics we remain focused on. CFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate decreased to an annualized 1.7% during the fourth quarter, outperforming the 1.9% 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate as reported by S&P. At the end of 2010, 98% of CFG's CLO investments were passing their most junior OC tests when evaluated on a percentage of fair value, up from 96% at the end of Q3. When measured on a percentage of transactions basis, 62 deals, or 94% of the company's CLO investments, were passing their most junior OC test, an increase from 88% at the end of Q3. Or said another way, an additional 6 deals began passing their junior most OC test during the fourth quarter. TFG's U.S. CLOs, representing 90% of the overall fair value through Q4, performed very well, with 100% by both fair value and number of transactions passing their most junior OC tests. In comparison, the Q4 market-wide average for U.S. CLOs estimated to be passing their junior OC test was approximately 92%. At the end of Q4, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated triple C or below fell to 8.3% from 9.6% at the end of Q3. In comparison, the Q4 market-wide median triple C asset holdings of U.S. CLOs were estimated to be 8.6%. Also of note, TFG's WARF, or weighted average rating factor, now stands at 2,671 as of the end of Q4. Let me make a few comments on our corporate actions activities for the year. TFG continues to leverage the company's majority or significant ownership positions in CLO transactions in order to affect the outcome of certain corporate actions and in order to protect or enhance the value of its investments. During 2010, TFG consented to the transfer of the U.S. Island 4 CLO transaction onto the LCM platform. In addition, TFG facilitated the appointment of sub-advisors on 2 of its CLOs and the outright assignment of collateral management responsibilities on 4 additional transactions. Due in large part to its majority or significant ownership strategy, TFG will receive a substantial share of the ongoing fees in these deals, further improving the economics on these investments. These developments highlight the ability of the investment manager to create and capitalize upon the synergies between TFG's contractual rights, majority ownership positions, and access to LCM, TFG's in-house loan management team. We expect to continue these strategic assets in order to bring further value to our investments. Let me now hand it over to Jeff to provide some color on the present loan market conditions and outlook.
Thanks, Dave. With the continued improvement in the senior bank loan default rate thus far in 2011, we are encouraged about the prospects for TFG's investment portfolio. We anticipate that, absent an exogenous shock to global economies or financial markets or other widespread financial market disruption, TFG's CLO investments will continue to generate significant cash flows during 2011, supported by low credit losses, continued reinvestment at attractive yields, stable structural leverage, and the resumption of cash flows on certain European CLO transactions which are currently breaching their junior OC tests. This improved outlook for senior bank loans has also been reflected in the secondary market prices for CLO equity. While it is difficult to generalize, given the variety of different structures that encompass the CLO equity space, we have observed certain CLO equity trading at prices significantly above par. Again, while it's difficult to generalize, we are now observing secondary CLO equity risk-adjusted IRRs trading in the low to mid-teens area. This is a significant improvement throughout 2010 when average IRR trading levels were observed to be in the area of 20 to 25%. This improvement in both the underlying bank loan market and secondary CLO trading levels, coupled with a tightening of CLO liability spreads, has also led to an observed increase in the new issue CLO market. Today, we see a significant pickup in the near-term new issue CLO pipeline, and nearly all of these anticipated transactions are arbitrage-driven deals as opposed to balance sheet or financing trades
that dominated the CLO new issue market in 2010. The CLO arbitrage is currently producing new issue risk-adjusted CLO equity IRRs in the LIBOR plus 1,000 basis points area, similar to the LIBOR spread level at which our current CLO equity portfolio was originally modeled, and comparing favorably to the low to mid-teens secondary CLO equity clearing levels mentioned previously. This is encouraging on two fronts. One, the growing new issue market will help our in-house manager, LCN, to grow assets under management and thus fee income. And two, it will allow TFG to invest its current and expected cash balances at attractive levels in both LCM and third-party managed CLOs. We thought it also might be helpful to put the observed improvement in the CLO market into some additional context. One of the metrics that reflects the improvement in CLO equity is over-collateralization tests, or OC tests. An average run-of-the-mill CLO generally starts with a junior OC test of approximately 4 to 4.5%. 4.5 years hence, the OC test would have been reduced to approximately 2 to 2.5% based on average historical loss rates of 50 basis points per year. You can see from our enhanced deal disclosure that the majority of our CLO investments currently exceed the 2.5% OC test level, meaning that the majority of our CLO equity has more OC cushion than was originally expected at this point in the deals and their life, increasing the deal's ability to weather future losses. Additionally, through turnover in the underlying bank loan assets, increasing asset spreads against fixed liability spreads have improved the individual deal's net interest margin. As long as the deals are passing their junior most OC test, this net interest margin improvement drops directly to the CLO equity's owner. As an example, if the CLO is 8% of the capital structure, CLO equity is 8% of the capital structure, implying 12 times leverage, then an 80 basis point improvement in the net interest margin would translate into an overall improvement of approximately 960 basis points to the deal's annual return on a go-forward basis, with all other assumptions held constant. We think that this helps to explain some of the above-par prices that we have observed in the secondary CLO market. So in summary, we are very encouraged by the current market conditions and hope to see many of these trends continue throughout 2011. In terms of further questions from investors, we've been asked about the effect that of LIBOR floors may have upon our CLO portfolio. Specifically, how much of our underlying loan portfolio contain LIBOR floors, and are these floors included in our modeled returns? First, some background. The inclusion of LIBOR floors was a practice that began as outstanding bank loans were amended and their maturities extended. Today, we believe the majority of new issue bank loans contain LIBOR floors. Based on current LIBOR levels, these floors may add approximately 100 to 150 basis points to an individual bank loan's current coupon. We estimate that a significant number of our underlying loan portfolio may contain LIBOR floors, and this number may grow as our existing portfolio continues to turn over. While the benefit of LIBOR floors can be observed in our underlying loan portfolio's increased current average coupon, the full benefit of these LIBOR floors may in some cases be understated. This is because many third-party trustees that produce the individual bank loan asset data do not project the LIBOR floor to be in place beyond the current payment period, which is generally quarterly. Thus, on a go-forward basis, the benefit that LIBOR floors can have on a loan may be understated. Let me give you a rough example. For illustrative purposes, assume that the LIBOR floor adds 125 basis points to our underlying loan portfolio yield. On 20% of our CLO portfolio, all things being equal, this could produce a 25 basis point increase in our total portfolio average coupon, and combined with the CLO's leverage, would increase the CLO's IRR. This potential benefit would last only so long as current LIBOR rates remain below the stated floor. So assuming that current LIBOR remains so for the next 18 to 24 months, which would take us to the end of our reinvestment period, and assuming an additional turnover in the portfolio with more loans containing LIBOR floors, we could see a further IRR increase from this phenomenon. As current LIBOR rates move higher, the benefit from LIBOR floors is reduced. So the higher end of the range will be more difficult to achieve if you assume an increasing rate environment. But nonetheless, we believe LIBOR floors can be seen as a benefit to our potential future returns. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mike Rosenberg to address some other investor questions.
Hi. We continue to have interest, investor interest in the company's share repurchase program, and I'd like to say a few words about that program, which has been in place for several years now. We initiated the share buyback program after consultation with shareholders, and we believe it may provide liquidity to investors and an efficient means to return cash to TFG shareholders. Such purchases may, at appropriate price levels below NAV, represent an attractive use of TFG's excess cash and an efficient means to return cash to shareholders. As the shares continue to trade at a discount to NAV, it is accretive on a NAV per share basis because, for example, using December month-end numbers, the company is paying $5.70 to get $9.47 of net asset value. Any decision to engage in share repurchases will be made by the investment manager upon consideration of relevant factors and will be subject to, among other things, applicable law and profits at the time. In particular, the level of such repurchases are governed by relevant Dutch regulation. For the current repurchase program, TFG's maximum daily trading volume is based on the average daily volume traded in September 2010. The repurchased shares are not canceled and remain outstanding, but do not receive a dividend and do not count in the calculation of NAV per share. Finally, as a reminder from last quarter, we have been asked how the repurchases affect incentive fees. The incentive fee is calculated on movements in net asset value, and the calculation adjusts for capital items during the relevant period, such as buybacks or dividends. Therefore, there is no incentive fee directly attributable to the NAV per share accretion resulting from the share buybacks. Finally, let me say a few words about the asset management aspect of TFG, which has been of interest to our investors. The company remains committed to its current strategy of expanding its asset management platform, diversifying its income streams, and its efforts to continue its transformation into a broad-based financial services firm that functions not only as an investment holding company, but also as a firm that owns interests in multiple operating businesses. As Phil mentioned previously, the LCM transaction has been very successful for TFG. Looking forward, we expect to continue to support the growth of LCM's business via primary CLO issuance, managed accounts, and CLO manager consolidation, as well as other strategic opportunities. We anticipate that, market conditions permitting, LCM will be able to continue to grow with assets under management in a measured and disciplined manner that leverages LCM's expertise, investment style, and performance track record. During Q3 2010, after evaluating a number of opportunities during the year, TFG acquired a 10% interest in a new multi-jurisdictional real estate venture, Green Oak. Green Oak is currently executing on advisory assignments and continuing to evaluate funds in select markets where we believe the Green Oak founders and local teams have a deep, long-standing market presence, access, and experience. As reported previously, we currently do not expect to see operating income benefits from the venture in the immediate future as it is a medium-term investment. We believe that the Green Oak investment is a continuation of the TFG model of seeking to partner with superior asset managers. We believe this venture will strengthen TFG's asset management capabilities and, along with LCM, will form a foundation for TFG's asset management platform. We expect to continue to explore investment opportunities in management companies both within and beyond the leveraged loan market. That brings us to the end of the Q&A section. We'd like to thank everyone for joining the call. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us directly with any questions. We look forward to speaking with you in the future. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.